I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
We are back for episode 127 of Digital Divination.
127, that's great. You know, it's also great that I work for Wizards of the Coast, but the opinions I express here are mine and not theirs.
Good thing.
Smooth. Good thing. Yeah. Smooth as silk, Ron.
Yeah, yeah.
This episode brought to you by, Boraxo Cleaners. Clean your starships with the best of them.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's... that's interesting. And, we're going through a cosmic birthday, and one of the things that we got engaged in was I think a little bit of spoilers are going to be okay, but I'll just warn that, was dealing with some advertisements. And yes. We got to hear Jason go ahead and do some of his advertising voices for that as well.
It has been a delight, yes.
Yeah, I thought that was a lot of fun. And speaking of sort of delightful Starfinder second edition things, I thought we could talk about creating Starfinder second edition monsters. And we've talked about monsters a little bit when we created what do we call that turkey? What type of turkey?
I don't remember it was some sort of turkinator.
Did you see the art, though? Did you see that they...
Ryan, someone did art?
Well, Ryan pulled something.
Ryan pulled something together to be the art.
Yeah.
I should check that out.
When he posted it on Facebook. Yeah, and I just been, looking at all the various things that we have out there for Starfinder 2nd Edition and thinking about, coming up with creatures and whatnot. For whatever reason, I might be doing that. There's some in Second Contact.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that has a variety of ranges. And there's some in the playtest adventures that are out there.
Yeah.
But that's not a lot. Hmm. There's no monster core or alien core. I don't know what we're going to call this thing. Right. There's no thing for Starfinder 2nd Edition out yet. And it's not been announced. I have no idea when that's going to come.
I think it has been announced that it's going to be called Alien Archive, just like the first edition. I remembered seeing that someplace.
I don't remember. And it didn't have core on it, so I don't know.
I know what it's being called, and now I have to double. I don't double check, but I don't think you're correct, Ron.
I'm not. Okay. No. Well, there's.
I'll just say that much.
There's the biggest proof that, in fact, I'm not working with inside information. Yeah, and I'm just flat out wrong.
And I don't even. Yeah, so I don't know that's been announced. I don't know.
It's not been announced.
Yeah, and I don't. I mean, we all know it's going to come, right? We know it's coming.
Of course, it has to, right?
But we don't know.
You've got to have a monster book.
Right after Swamp Core is going to be a book of aliens. Some sort of alien core.
So, but if you were playing second edition soon, right, and you wanted monsters, you got a couple different places you can go, right? You could, or a couple ways you could go about doing that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can take the ones already out for the playtest, but there are a range of levels, and it's not enough of one level really to have a whole adventure from Second Contact and the ones in the adventures already. Otherwise, you just basically go through the same thing. So that's one thing you could do. The other thing you could do is you got Monster Core, and you could bring in those monsters because they've already kind of been mechanically set up in the same system for challenge rating and stuff.
Well, let me ask Jason exactly that, at the risk of being spoiled. I haven't looked in Cosmic Birthday or any of these. Do they point you to the Monster Core for anything?
I'm not sure, but I don't think
so. Or do they reproduce all the stats for everything that you would need?
I think it's pretty self-contained. It's, mostly robots.
Yeah, I wasn't saying that those pointed you to that, but I was saying that That's one place you could get monsters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I won't say the name. I won't tell you what the monster is, but here's a monster that's definitely in Monster Core in Cosmic Birthday, and the whole stat block is there.
Oh,
okay. Okay. So they pull the whole thing into.
Yes.
So you need see nothing about. Well, I can't say you need see nothing about Pathfinder 2nd Edition because most of the Starfinder playtest book says go look at the player core. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But your point stands. You could go to Monster Core.
Yeah. So you could go to Monster Core. You could use the existing ones, or you could create brand new ones, right? Maybe bringing in Starfinder 1 monsters and converting them, or do something just brand new using the rules in the GM core, you know, that kind of gives you challenge rating and what kind of matches up with that. So there's a lot of different ways to go. And one of the things I was wondering is, if you really wanted to have Starfinder be its own Starfinder thing, right? Mm-hmm. What's most appropriate, right? If you bring in stuff from Monster Core, well, that's kind of those are Pathfinder things, you know? Maybe you should put a sci-fi skin on them, but then that's a different monster. Yeah. So that's what I've been thinking. That's what I've been wrestling with myself as I'm thinking about monsters and whatnot. And I was wondering what these two folks who know a lot about Starfinder, a lot about Pathfinder and other systems and their monsters, what you all think.
Well, you know, there are certain like things that are kind of like, I would say kind of staples that you could do in either, like, you know, like some undead, right? Your skeleton is a skeleton, a zombie is a zombie. You know, they're going to kind of act the same way, whether or not it's sci-fi or fantasy, right? You might say that the skeleton is an alien skeleton and it has no, you know, it's got a bunch more eye holes in the skull than it would be, or it's got three arms or whatever, and that, but for the most part it's gonna be pretty much the same. And so there's some, I think you can use Monster Core for some real basic beasties, real basic stuff.
Yeah, animals are gonna be similar, animals, even if they're sort of weird looking. But I see your point. If you're going to be running Starfinder 2nd Edition for people who've been playing a lot of Pathfinder 2nd Edition, and especially if you're going to sort of like take the reins as the GM and you sort of your typical GM or two are going to be among your players, then you're in a situation where they kind of already know the Monster Core. So if you're going to just try to make some sort of, you know, gigantic alien thing and use the stats for, you know, the ogres or what have you, they might kind of be familiar with all those numbers. So that might make your pool of available monsters feel a little bit smaller, maybe.
There's a sort of another kind of category that also kind of like stays the same, and that is kind of the Eldritch Horror category.
Right.
Terrible things from beyond space and time are terrible, and from beyond space and time, no matter what time and space you're currently in. So, you know, you go out and look at anything that sort of we brought forward from the Cthulhu mythos, you can use. Although, for certain things, this vaguely reminds me of, this to be on a tangent, is I was playing a weird Western game, and we had a sort of Lovecraft theme for this campaign. And at one point we came across a Gug, right? The sort of big guys with the split open head, right? And he, you know, they kind of have four arms, but they split at the elbow and not at the shoulder, kind of thing. Like, they just sort of that. But this, we got in and we're like, oh, and you know, and normally these things are just sort of biting and clawing and whatever. But this guy, for whatever reason, had a chain gun. Like an old timey wild, because it's Wild West, right? He had to have some kind of firearm, right? And for some reason, he also had a little Confederate hat on, so we knew he was a bad guy. you could do that with sort of something like this, to take something from the Cthulhu mythos and then just kind of like say, oh, well, this is a Gug, but he's got a laser cannon and he's going to shoot it at you, right? So, or you know, any other sort of intelligent monster might have a gun, and that's not too difficult to slap on. From, you know, you just take the stats of the weapon, look at it and see whether or not it needs to be, you know, two dice or three dice or whatever, you know, for the whatever level it is, and then just use the numbers for like any ranged attack it already has, and just the pluses for that.
A little bit of reskinning can help with that too. If you wanted an alien, if you had the Gug stats in front of you and it's the right level and everything, And knowing that a Gug has sort of this big maw, that's head that splits open, which is pretty distinctive, and those strange forearms, like you said, you don't need to describe a Gug. You could describe some sort of alien with a whole bunch of arms. The players are never going to know that can only attack with four at one time, and that you're using the Gug stats, especially if you've given it some kind of ranged attack along the lines of a Gug with a chain gun could be any number of multi-limbed horrors with a chain gun.
Mm-hmm. Just
because somebody's familiar with the Gug stat block specifically doesn't mean they can't be in for a surprise, especially when you do sort of the light modifications that sort of, you know, that you can do with make a monster elite or the like, you know, just kind of bump its numbers a little bit up or a little bit down.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting point when you mentioned the Gug with a chain gun. It reminds me, when you mentioned Gug, I'm thinking Abomination Vaults, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Gug in there.
Yeah.
But in any case, in Starfinder, one of the interesting changes, especially going into second edition, is the prevalence of ranged attacks. Like everybody's got ranged attacks and things. And if you have a traditional Gug, that's a melee character, right? It's got to beat you up and eat you kind of thing. Now you add a ranged attack to it that kind of fits more what the player character is going to do. And I would say kind of in addition to ranged attack, then you have to look at alternative modes of movement. Flying is becoming much more common in Starfinder second edition even than it was in first edition. So ranged attacks and flying are two things that I think are going to be much, you have to take those into account with the creatures that you're using and or developing. So maybe a Gug with a chain gun and a, you know, flight pack or something, right?
Right. Or a reaction that lets him swat someone out of the air. If
they that would be fun.
Some sort of counter for the flying.
Right.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
You know, when you also want to make sure that if you're appending ranged attacks to creatures that generally don't have them, which I think I agree, as you say, you'll be doing very often. I think if you're converting creatures into Starfinder second edition, because fighting at ranged is assumed in a lot of cases, make sure that your monster's ranged attacks are on par. It doesn't have to be exactly the same, but are on par with its melee attacks, or you risk having the monster be substantially weaker if the foes are able to get it at range. And it just doesn't feel like it's nearly as much of a challenge. If the Gug with the chain gun is only doing half as much damage as it does with its array of claw attacks, then people who keep it at range, you know, on one hand, they're being rewarded for keeping an enemy that is ferocious up close at a distance. That's something that should be something they should consider a benefit, smart play to do that. But on the other hand, you also don't want the monsters to be sort of a damage pushover that the characters don't realize the full danger of confronting them.
Yeah. That's why those charts in GM Core have all that sort of number stuff, right? You look at what kind of damage it does and look at compared to what it does melee, and then you can kind of fudge, you know, you essentially just fudge the numbers. Not when you're playing, but when you're writing stuff down. You can be like, oh, it's this many dice plus a number. Like, it doesn't necessarily need to follow the same rubric of a player character. Like, where are you getting that plus six from? It's a monster. It gets plus six.
Right.
Or you can do some other stuff too. Like if you just want to give it a normal laser gun, and that does whatever much fire damage plus a little bit of its, maybe it has a little bit of weapon specialization. You can then that's still not enough. You can give it some sort of rider to that, or like special action that it does to, maybe not even action, like give like it has sneak attack, but only with this laser. Like, so when it shoots when it lasers someone who's off guard, they take an additional 1d6 fire damage, and that'll sort of help you peanut butter the numbers up, basically.
Exactly.
Right, as I like to say.
Exactly. Any monster that makes a particularly ferocious attack doing mental damage on top of whatever its physical attack is, because it's so terrifying in its attack, is a good way to increase some of those numbers.
Mm-hmm. And you could have counters to ranged attack as well. You know, it has some special charge ability, right? That allows it to double move and attack and, you know, things like that, or bypass
teleport.
Yeah. Oh, Yeah, definitely. It could just teleport behind them and yeah. eat them. Yeah, that, I like that one. That's a good one.
But any monster that you're using sort of at your own tables for your own personal use is the kind of thing you control the environment in a lot better. If you know right. that a creature is going to be fighting in the cramped confines of a space station, it kind of doesn't matter what they can do from 200 feet away.
Right.
The fact that all they can do is fight up in melee is actually maybe not such a detriment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a third thing, but mm-hmm. I guess the category that there are a couple monsters in Monster Core and in the sort of, you know, Pathfinder universe that basically fit, you know, not besides the Eldritch Horrors, there's the related Dominion of the Black creatures, right? Mm-hmm. Those are space creatures. They're just straight up from space, right? And, you know, in Monster Core, there's like two spreads of them in here. I was just looking at them. None of them have range attacks. So yes, you might want to sort of add that on to that, but for the most part they're weird, they're alien, they steal your brain or look like flying saucer things, or just terrible. This guy is just a brain walking around, gross looking. Classic sci-fi stuff, right? You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, but putting the fantasy into science fantasy, you could also give them spells, right?
So, yeah.
Something
yeah,
like
I mean,
that.
I think that's what these guys probably have spells. Yeah, this one.
So that might be how your enemies, yeah. how the creatures you're creating are able to deal with foes at range is they just have, you know, long range spells.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was thematically, I guess, one of the things I was thinking about, if you're doing a space fantasy, are you doing a disservice to use fantasy creatures in that primarily space fantasy venue, or should you change them up some?
I mean, I'd just give them either something that says a little bit of space.
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? Depending on how intelligent they are, if you're just going for like a beastie, then it, you know, hey, you're going to fight this wolf. It has green fur instead of gray fur. It's an alien wolf. You don't necessarily have to use the Tashdari, right? If you want to, you know, or it does something else that's sort of just slightly weird and alien. But if you're also doing something that's intelligent, I don't know, for some reason, the Sphinx keeps coming to mind, even though I think they can fly. I'm not sure, but like, you know, they have a jetpack. They have
or built-in laser, cybernetics, or
built-in cybernetics. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, Sphinx with a cybernetic eyeball. Hey, yeah. Look, there you go. There's your science fantasy.
And a lot of very magical creatures that are in the Monster Core, you can kind of describe as more mundane-looking aliens that just have cybernetics that let them do what otherwise the magical things are. You know, devils who can see in the dark no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's a person that's got, you know, some sort of eldritch cyber, you know, cybernetics that let them see entirely in the dark. That's in like even magical darkness and the like. They got, you know, just sort of hand wavy. Okay, it's great. It's great cybernetics.
I just thought of like a trick that you can also play in a little bit is, and you can maybe use this like once or twice, is that you come up against something that is just a classic straight up fantasy monster, right? Here he is. This is a troll. And he's attacking you. And then when you defeat the troll and it turns into pixels and it just, blah, 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 blah. Oh, you're inside of a gaming rig all along kind of thing. It was a hologram all along. And it was just, you know, seemed very real. And then, you know, that becomes part of like what you do. Oh, where are you? You're in a weird hollow arcade that you're actually in a fantasy game inside the arcade kind of situation.
Right, right. So it's like a hard light troll or something.
But, yeah, right. Well, yeah, I mean, you don't even necessarily need to worry about like, oh, what is how are holograms act in Starfinder 2nd edition when you go to fight them? Are they incorporeal, blah, blah, blah. You just say, oh, so just use the stats as normal, but when you kill it, it blinks away, you know, instead of just leaving a corpse.
This is a good, I want to key off of this, but it's going to sound like I'm taking the long way around. In my monster advice, even if you've got for the monsters that you use, you know, there's the Monster Core, but also keep in mind that there's a really robust set of other monsters that show up in all kinds of Pathfinder 2nd edition products. Yeah. Right now I'm running Season of Ghosts, and I will be sort of minimally spoiler for the Season of Ghosts adventure path, but I've been looking at the monsters that are in the back of the adventure path. And a lot of them are a type of special fiend called Nindorus. Nindorus are creatures that have been evil creatures caught up in the cycle of reincarnation and have broken that cycle of reincarnation to become monsters that feed on others, and sort of how it's been. There's a bunch of different kinds based on how the cycle's been broken and, you know, how they want to, you know, how they want to trick or assault people. But one of the things that's really neat kind of graphically about that is even though these creatures all look very different, frog-like or you know, just animate bundles of hair or whatever, a lot of them have blood red butterflies. They either pour out of their mouths or pour out of their wounds. All this is just the monster description, which are really evocative.
Right.
So I kind of thought, all right, well, if I'm going to be making monsters for Starfinder, let's look at some of the things that maybe would be a surprise to players, even players that knew Pathfinder 2nd Edition very well. Well, you could kind of pull these things out. And what is the cycle of reincarnation look like? Well, maybe it's like video game characters that kind of get played and die and played and die and played and get some sort of malevolent sentience. And the red butterflies are like red pixels that come out when they create, because they've got, so when you started talking about the, you know, maybe they're video game characters, I'm like, oh, well, that could actually layer on top of a set of sort of niche monsters that you're able to add a great deal of sort of sci-fi flavor to.
Yeah, it all sort of, you know, depends on what kind of campaign it is that you're running, right? You know, it might make, you might be doing a more of a Mad Max out in the wasteland kind of sort of thing, right, on Akaton, right? You're not necessarily going to use these kind of, like, that kind of specific tweak, but you've got other plenty of different things that you can do that can use other, you know, reskin monsters in a way that it's like, oh, this guy, you know. For the most part, I forgot what they're called. Akeshti are essentially lizard folk, right? We've got plenty of Aruxi stat blocks. You can just use basically use of that, or serpent folk stat blocks, and be like, oh, these guys are sand, you know, wasteland serpent people.
How do you do the spitting blood from their eyes? That's the coolest thing that Akeshtis do.
You just do a little
There's
range
your
attack.
Ranged attack, right?
A little blood eye.
Yeah, one of the things that we've been talking a lot about is the sci-fi part of it, but it's still kind of a science fantasy. So how do you make it sci-fi magical, but different from fantasy magical? Or is there a difference?
Yeah, it's very real, much so.
Yeah.
One of the ways to do that is to just look, if you just pull open your, the Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest book, it's got all the spells that are new, and they kind of kick you back to the player core for all the other spells. Well, any creature that does any of the spells that are new and unique to Starfinder 2nd Edition themselves become kind of Starfinder monsters, right? A Pathfinder monster could do that if you ported it back the other way, but somebody that's doing sort of a bouncing force disc or making a comm unit chime in order to give you, like, you know, a bunch of bonuses to, you know, because you feel all heroic. Those things are sort of automatically feel very, very Starfinder appropriate science fantasy, and are probably good candidates to maybe just add to a new monster that you're creating, or swap in for a monster that you're sort of upgrading from Pathfinder to Starfinder.
There's also a little bit of, like, that you can do with just sort of general color, essentially, for what a monster is doing and how it acts. If it, again, this sort of works more on sort of intelligent creatures, right? You just have them being more modern, right? You know, there's nothing. And granted, you know, when I'm, like, running a troll in it or anything, I'm not necessarily thinking about, like, well, how would a troll talk in semi fake medieval times. Now, you know, I'm not going, like, fie and fie onto you. I'm sort of enjoying, like, ah, you got me. Haha. But of course, you know, if you're just sort of, like, playing in a science fantasy, they could be just a little more, I mean, especially Starfinder is a little more irreverent, a little more, pop culture in a lot of ways too. You can do it, you know, do stuff with the monsters. And when they are, you know, you're walking through the streets of Absalom Station and you're just sort of running into some, you know, again, I keep going to lizard folk or whatever, but, you know, but they're wearing, you know, t-shirts from the, you know, Strawberry Machine Cake's latest tour or whatever, you know, you can just be like, yeah, they're They're in your. They're in the world. They're in that world, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good things to think about there.
yeah. What about you, John? What do you think?
Yeah, we've done a lot of talking, John. All you've done is ask some questions.
But yeah, because I'm getting some help suspicious. Here. yeah, well, so, you know, I think for me, what I'm considering is that there should be a mix of these, right? So have some throwbacks to original Starfinder, you know, kind of bring them into second edition, you know, with the, you know, basically do some conversions and whatnot. And some of them you don't have to. Like, you remember the Akatas that we ran into in Dead Sons? You know, they're in the Monster Corps. So, you know, we can see our good old friends real easy, you know.
I mean, yeah, they've always been in both systems.
Yeah, you know, so I think that's kind of fun. You can modernize some of the things, you know. So you think of, as Jason kind of pointed to, you know, about undead and things like that, and you know, give them newer equipment, newer spells, or whatever. And again, we saw in Dead Sons there was a vampire, you know, a modern day vampire in there, you know. So you had some of that, but also I think creating something completely different that just really fits the space fantasy feel, you know, something that looks unlike any creature that you would see in normal fantasy, and coming up with something new that thematically, you know, kind of fits where you're at. It doesn't have to be horror related. I remember Ron in your the Dead City,
the Blind City,
the Blind City, right?
Volume came 4 up, of Dead Sons.
Yeah, you know, you brought in
Dawn of Flames.
Dawn of Flames. Dead Sons. Yeah.
You know, so you had some interesting things in there, you know, that were kind of brought in. So I'm thinking a mix. And I guess what I was concerned about, and the reason why I want to talk to you guys, is I don't want to just like reskin Pathfinder creatures and just change them a little bit and put them in Starfinder. I think Starfinder deserves bigger differences than just that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, of course, if you've got the time to do that now, go for it. Mm-hmm. Right. Like for your campaign, if you're still running the playtest and you still want you've gone through all the material, or you want to just come up with something new, it's not that difficult to just, you know, again, create a monster. We did it a couple months ago. And sort of using sort of the architecture of Pathfinder Second Edition, you can create new things. It's kind of the same thing with when you're making a Pathfinder monster. You kind of want it to be unique and have a thing that it does that maybe nothing else does. You know, sometimes you want just basic stuff too. If you need a basic brute, it does this, it does sudden charge, you know, it hits really hard and has a big axe, and that's its sort of shtick, and that's good, and that's fine. But sometimes you want something weird and cool, like, oh, this is some kind of, you know, unusual dragon, so it's got to be able to do X, Y, and Z. You got to come up with something new.
A laser dragon, of course. Yeah, we need
a laser dragon. You got to have a laser dragon, of course. It shoots its laser breath, and it, you know, what does that mean? Like, is that just fire? Well, no, you could spice it up and have it be that it's... Right. So, you know, it's not just, it's such a forceful laser blast. And yes, it does fire damage, but it also just, it pushes you back 5 feet or dazzles you or something like that, right?
Yeah, and this actually brings up something else. Damage types, right? So you have kind of set damage types in the Pathfinder Second Edition, the remastered stuff. Is that enough, those damage types? Should there be anything in addition in Starfinder Second Edition?
No.
Okay.
I think there are plenty.
Is that enough?
Yeah. There are a plenty.
I know. I've been looking at them.
Vitality, Void, Sonic, you know, Force, you know, all that stuff is I think pretty much everything you would need.
Well, and I think it is clever to have plasma damage in Starfinder First Edition be a combination of fire and electricity. And I think that there's more combos that can feel very sci-fi or magic.
That's what I was thinking.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If
yeah.
something does sonic and void damage right together, it's sort of the call of nothingness that's right. Maybe, you know, can be super interesting. I do want to, although I agree with you, Jason, I do want to make sure that we're not losing sight of the former. When you say it can be something that's sort of the standard critter for what you need or something crazy like a laser dragon, one of the things that was really hard to communicate as a developer, hard to communicate to freelancers, is along the lines of, look, if I want you to give me some kind of big hound hill giants use, this is not an opportunity to create the craziest, most, unusual monster there is around. Sometimes it's just got to be a big dog, and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's also the fact that writing a monster book is hard. Writing monsters for a monster book is hard because you don't have the context. The monster's theme has to create the context. The narrative around it has to say the sort of, has to imagine the kind of context in which it can be used. Taking a monster that you're writing for a specific adventure or a specific adventure path or even your specific table in a dangerous place that they're in is actually kind of a lot easier because you can skip a lot of the steps of making it sort of universal in some way. It can be all about what is the monster needed to do at this time in the narrative.
Yeah, and that's actually something I've been thinking about is how do you tie in these new creatures, right? However you're putting them together for your campaign, how do you tie them in closely with whatever context you're building as well? I think that becomes very important, for doing that. And so I'm trying to be very thoughtful as I'm thinking about different aspects of it, especially if it's a new context that I'm thinking about, how do I bring that into kind of existing monsters to make them fit a new context if I want to do that. So like, you know, I really like post-apocalyptic kind of adventure situations. So, you know, how would you put in take a monster there and how it's affected, you know, think of like Fallout, right? How the creatures are affected, right? It's very different, than maybe if you see that creature in a different context, so.
Like you're saying, Ron, it's tricky to know what the monster's entry has to create the context, but in a way, you know, it's not, sometimes you just pick a thing, you just pick a context, right? Oh, I need to make this this is definitely a desert monster, and I don't necessarily, it doesn't have to be applicable to every biome. Essentially, right? It's a desert monster. I'm not gonna use it. Or if I've got it, I get it later on, and I need this is kind of what I need. Does the what I like, but it's the right, you know, it's the right level and all that. But it's a desert monster. But I'm having a tundra adventure. That's when you just need to reskin it yourself and just be like, oh, it's cold. This is cold, and it can swim through the snow instead of the sand or whatever. You know, I think that, you know, as long as things aren't like so super specific, then it's not too difficult to tweak kind of anything.
You can also build monsters that have their own sort of built-in hooks. I'm thinking of something like the Nereid, right, with the one that makes the water, the water fae that has like this shawl that they make, and somebody gets a hold of the shawl, they want to get it back at all costs, they'll do what the shawl holder says. The number of sort of adventure stories that came out thereafter, the number of adventures in which these creatures appeared that had the hook of somebody bad took their shawl and now they have to do bad things at this person's behest to try to get it back, or they don't want to do those things and they need the adventurers to help them get it back, becomes kind of a hook that you can use in a lot of different settings. And I've seen it in, you know, from forests to coastal to dark lands, to everything, because it's got kind of a built-in hook. So when you talk about post-apocalyptic, I think one of the things to think about post-apocalyptic is stuff breaks down. And so it's easy to have a monster that counts on stuff, right? Maybe cybernetics, maybe something else that is broken down and has the monster sort of out on a quest in order to fix its cybernetic eye or cybernetic limb or what have you. And that's the thing that brings it into whatever conflict needs to be in conflict, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, so we have some cybernetic creatures in Starfinder, right? You have cybernetic golems, cybernetic zombies, kind of as monster entries, right? We've had. Mm-hmm. But you can make cybernetic anything.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right, really?
Yeah.
So I guess what I wonder is then, should cybernetic just be a monster, a creature trait, rather than an aspect of a creature?
You could make it like a template, you got elite, you could make, and I think, I feel like in Howl of the Wild, there was some weird ones too, like you could make a giraffe tiny, but like, cybernetic might be a, you know, template that's easy, you know, it does that, you know, maybe it takes a little more electricity damage, but it's strong against something else, damage or something, you know, like, and there you go. I mean, like, you know, give it and then give it a weird laser eye attack and you're done.
Yeah. The other thing that it might be is not strengths or weaknesses or attacks the creature has, but something like a trait like that can also be a way in which the players interact with it. It could be that if something has the cybernetic trait, that means it has lootable cyberware of some kind. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right. If a creature has a cybernetic trait, maybe there is a chance you can actually get its, you know, whatever, you know, maybe it's got Magitek instead of, CyberTech or something. But whatever it is, it's kind of, it's built into the creature sort of treasure allocation as lootable.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you could probably hack it as well, the creature, right, somehow. Yeah, so a different type of attack and things. Yeah, I just, you know, when you mentioned the cybernetic thing, I'm thinking, you know, there's so many other different type of creature traits you have out there, and in Starfinder, maybe we should have some that would be applicable across both. But you know, like there are androids in Pathfinder, or maybe androids had the cybernetic trait or something. Yeah, I don't know. Hmm. Yeah.
Let me hook the last three ideas all together in something. Okay. And if you've got some sort of creature who has cybernetics, but the nature of their cybernetics is that it's easily hackable, right? Hmm. Then one of the concerns is that the players or other NPCs could sort of hack the monster to make it do things in that sort of narrated way and have treasure that is sort of acquirable by the characters when they're done, and give the impetus for the monster to be out trying to fix what it's got that's broken that makes it too easily hackable or something like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, mix and match all these things together.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, yeah. Dick, to kind of answer your question, answer your statement there, John, I just went and made sure, because the cybernetic zombie is in Second Contact, the second edition version, and it has the tech trait.
Oh, okay,
tech. Item tech. That's sort of, I had a feeling they had some sort of trait to sort of denote that. Spells that affect technology can affect this thing.
Right.
Right, essentially.
Oh, like constructs robots might have the tech trait. If they're constructs with the tech trait.
All the robots also have the tech trait, yes. They do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if they define
that. Well, and I think the robots can have tech and construct, right? Those are separate traits.
Technically, they have, construct, robot,
construct
tech.
Is their type, right?
Well, there's no such thing as that anymore. Well, but
sorry.
You don't have to have those. Like there are those that sort of
global creature groups. With it.
There are also global creature groups, constructs and undead and so forth. But necessarily, not a creature does not need to necessarily have them. You could try. I'm trying to think if there's anything that exists that doesn't have one of these creature type traits.
In the Pathfinder Bestiary 3, there's like a Roiling Incant, which is an animated spell, basically, that does not have any of the existing creature types. I think
I wrote that one, actually.
Did you? There you go. You answered your own question years ago.
Yeah, I did it a while back. But yeah, there you go. That's something that's just like pure magic. Yeah, right now it would probably have the arcane, divine, occult, or primal trait, but it necessarily doesn't need to have it doesn't need to be an aberration or an ooze or anything like that. It could just be nothing. It could be nothing.
I'm not even gonna. I think even without looking it up, it has the arcane trait. You also predicted that way back when.
Man,
there you go.
I was asked. It was Liz's idea, and I said, "Oh, let me do it because that's something that's actually it reminded me of something from Eberron, way back in the day. There were these like living spells, basically, mm-hmm. and you could mm-hmm. have just like it's a fireball, and it's just there. It's a fireball all the time, and it's coming at you, right? bad news. Yeah."
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground on this. You know, we were very specific before when we talked about our turkey Terminator thing. So this has personally been very helpful. That's the main reason I wanted the topic here.
Okay,
but hopefully some of our audience really cared about it as well. So.
Well, we'll see. We know what when whatever book
comes out, whatever happens, yes.
And see what the Starfinder team is doing with new and weird monsters.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason, and this has been Digital Divination.